Hi, welcome to today's webinar, hosted by Kinexus and presented by our guest, Tracy Defoe. It's titled Developing Coaching Skills, Mine, Yours, and Ours. I'm Mark Graben, a senior advisor with Kinexus. I am very happy to be your host today, and I'm very excited that Tracy is here. So before I introduce her formally, we'll do a couple of quick announcements. If this is your first time attending one of our Kinexus Continuous Improvement webinars, I just want to invite you to check out our website, kinexus.com. We are a software provider who shares a passion with our audience here of spreading continuous improvement. So if you'd like to learn more about how we do that, you can scan the QR code or go to kinexus.com. Not right now, but sometime after today's webinar. For those who are in attendance who are Kinexus customers, I want to remind you about our upcoming 2024 Kinexicon, different event than Kodacon, but it's a different con, Kinexicon, user conference that's going to be held in our home city of Austin, May 20th to 22nd. You can go to kinexus.com/Kinexicon. And then if you could advance one more.
I put this one in without telling you. So.
Oh, Tracy, well, tell us about this.
Question for the chat because I'm going to talk about coaching. But from my introduction, you will see that I am a CADA coach. I thought I'd invite people to put something in the chat just to tell us which one fits you. Are you curious about CADA but don't have much experience? Are you currently learning the improvement CADA, which means you probably have a coach? Are you a CADA coach, which for me means that you ask those five questions 5 days a week? Are you a lean continuous improvement professional, but don't yet have experience with CADA? I meet lots of those people. I always put this one in because it's fun. I used to work at Toyota. They don't teach this. What are you talking about? Or anything else. So please feel free to participate. You know, I don't like the one-sidedness of things, of webinars for sure. So here's a question. Let us know after you've told us where you are, who a little bit about who you are. So there you go. And now this is the slide you're looking for, I think.
Yes. And then I'm going to read a few of the responses, especially since it doesn't show in the recording. We've got a four. Oh. If you can put the slide back up,
real quick,
Tracy. We've got a four, a one, a one, a four, a never heard about it. One, one, four, 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 a two, a one and a two. So, okay. I think that's, there's a three. Maybe I'll tabulate that and put together a Pareto chart to share.
That would be incredibly fun.
Afterwards. Oh, we do have a six. So I think there's mostly ones and fours, Tracy.
So people who are curious about CADA and perhaps strangers to me, and then people who four is lean professional, no experience. And then I absolutely know that there are CADA friends and CADA coaches that I know who have showed up just to be supportive. So thank you for all of you. And thank you to the new people who showed, because there's nothing I like better than a CADA curious person who I can introduce and maybe help connect to the CADA community.
That's great.
Okay.
And I'm probably a four, to be honest about that. Very little CADA experience, but so I'm excited to learn here today. Let me introduce Tracy. We've already heard from Tracy a little bit, and I look forward to the presentation and more interaction. Tracy Defoe is an adult educator specializing in learning at work. About 10 years ago, she started coaching to develop a scientific mindset in people who were improving their processes at work using the improvement and coaching CADA, as detailed in Mike Rother's Toyota CADA books. Tracy is a co-founder of the global women's group CADA Girl Geeks. She's co-founder of CADA School Cascadia, and she's a facilitator with Tilo Schwartz's CADA Coaching Dojo Masterclass. She is president and chief education officer of TLFI, the Learning Factor. So with that, Tracy, again, thank you so much for being here. I'll turn it over to you.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me back, Mark. Okay. So as you can see, my reference is going to be CADA. So here, here's a little outline of what I'm going to talk about. The title of the webinar is Developing Coaching Skills, Mine, Yours, and Ours. And here's some of the questions that I'm hoping to address. What do we mean by coaching? What does coaching look like? What does it feel like? I'm going to talk about that. Do you have a coaching framework? Like, I am aware that there are other coaching frameworks. The GROW framework, for example, the GROW model. There's lots of coaching models and frameworks. I actually Googled yesterday how many coaching frameworks are popular in industry, and there's anywhere between four and 9 or 17, depending on which Google thing you click on. So there's lots. Mine is the Coaching Kata, and that is the one I will be referencing. How do we get better at coaching? You know, Mark mentioned I've been doing this for more than 10 years. I've actually been teaching adults. Wait, while I get to a number here. A long time, about 40 years. How did you get better? How do you get better at just about anything? But coaching is one. I want to talk about how you get better on your own, because I do meet a lot of people who are trying to learn kata coaching by themselves. How do you get better if you have a buddy or somebody to help you? How do you get better in community? And of course, what's your next step? I couldn't resist this photo of me with Coach Mark Rosenthal, because sometimes having colleagues raises you up. And I think this photo is hilarious. So anyway, that's Mark Rosenthal, one of my many coaches. So what do we mean by coaching? You know, PowerPoint offered me this. I've almost never take a stock photo, but PowerPoint offered me this when I put in what is coaching? And it offered me this photo. And I thought, okay, yeah, I get it. Like I said, if you're on your own and your boss or your organization has said, hey, manager, hey, CI manager, hey, operation manager, please be more of a coach, you may feel like you've just been pushed out of an airplane and you're not quite sure how to get your parachute to work. But if along the way you find a community or a group of people who actually know how to navigate that scary space, I think you'll be better off. So keep this in mind. And think about where you are on that tumble if you've been asked to coach, especially if you haven't had a lot of training or community, or if you haven't had the luxury of having somebody coach you. You haven't had the experience of what it feels like to have somebody you're working with use a coaching framework and coach you. So for me, what is coaching? Coaching is when one person helps another person grow and develop. And I don't want to elaborate too much on that, but I would say possibly grow and develop their work skills, their life skills, and perhaps their scientific thinking habits or more. So for me, the coaching is about an intention to help somebody grow and develop. And I want to just go right here to the robots at the robot school with the one robot on the podium, because telling people isn't coaching them. Okay. I'm taking that off the table. Telling isn't coaching. I used to say telling isn't teaching, but it isn't coaching either. I think this one sticks with me because Mark and I have a mutual friend in Deandra Wardell, and Deandra loves to tell stories about how I was her first coach and how being coached changed her perspective and in fact her work life in lots of different ways. But she used to work in a place where coaching went like this. Somebody would come up to her and say, I hear you've been assigned this task. Can I coach you? And then they would tell her what they would do. They would just say, I would do this, or go do that, or here's what works before. So that telling somebody what to do is not coaching. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about something a lot more hard, a lot more difficult, and a lot more deliberate, and perhaps a lot more human. If I'm going to talk about the kata, I have to start with Mike Rother. Mike Rother posted this picture on LinkedIn this week. I usually use like a pretty dignified picture of Mike Rother with his three books, but this one just makes me laugh and maybe shows where we've come since the first book came out. So Mike Rother is a researcher and I guess he's a retired researcher now, and an author of the three books that are at the bottom there, the Toyota Kata book, the Toyota Kata practice guide, and the Toyota Kata culture. And he's super proud of the other books that have been written recently, which are on the left side of your screen. And Mike studied and worked with Jeff Leiker at the University of Michigan. And they, of course, were writing books and researching Toyota, and particularly Toyota management culture. And wrote all those books explaining all the lean tools, you know, and people went out to deploy the lean tools. But Mike and Jeff both tell a very similar story about returning to a company they had visited months before to find that all of the improvements they thought they had left them with were dusty and neglected, you know, Kanban boxes with nobody had ever touched again, and big workarounds that frontline workers and supervisors had done to avoid using the tools that they thought they had improved for them. And so Mike went back and asked two research questions, which are in this first book, the Red Book, the Toyota Kata, Managing People for Improvement, Adaptiveness, and Superior Results. And the two research questions are here on the screen. The first one was, what are the unseen managerial routines and thinking that lie behind Toyota's success with continuous improvement and adaption? This was, the early 2000s, I think, that he was doing that work. And the one that's most kind of relevant to us, perhaps, what can other companies, what can other people, what can you do to develop similar routines and thinking in your organization or in yourself? So the Kata that we referenced are actually these ways to learn these routines and ways to learn these thinking. Mike wanted to call the book, by the way, Beyond What We Can See, because he was looking for the unseen routines that are baked into the culture. But there was, putting the word Toyota on a book gives it a lot more saleability. So in fact, the publisher used the word Toyota Kata. What is a kata? Well, if you or your kids do martial arts, you already know this. But since I can't ask you that, I'm going to tell you. Kata has two meanings in Japanese, and I suppose now in English. One of them is a way and the other one is a practice routine. So kata are simple structured routines that wax on, wax off, that you might be familiar with, that you practice deliberately. And shout out to Doug Lemoff, who I'm going to talk later. You probably will try to practice as perfectly as you can. So you practice deliberately in order to develop a habit and at the same time, new abilities. The goal of the Improvement Kata and the Coaching Kata are a scientific way of working and thinking to achieve, this is the official superior results, I think, is right out of the book. But I always think of it as mind-blowing results, like results that you never thought you would even tackle. So if you, for example, learn to play the piano, if you play a sport, if you drive an automatic stick car, you've probably learned some beginner practice routines, which we would call starter kata, so the practice routine. If you coached a sport, since we're talking about coaching today, you have probably taught some starter patterns. I used to coach t-ball, actually, when my kids were little, because I played softball when I was a teenager. So I was better at baseball than my husband, and I coached t-ball. And there's probably 100 kids running around my neighborhood who are in their 30s now who all throw a ball pretty well because I taught them to make a big X with their body, point their hip where they wanted the ball to go, and not use their arm, but use their whole body. So if you've taught some starter patterns, please let us know in the chat. We can tell us what starter kata you might have learned or coached, especially those of you who just said, I don't know anything about this and I don't know what it is. You can probably relate to scales on a piano or how you learn to drive stick, something like that. So I'm going to see the chat starting to go up, and I will expect that if something, Mark will let me know if there's something that...
There is. Can you see the chat or do you want me to read it?
Oh, I guess I can.
What's easier? I see Latin dancing.
Latin dancing. Wow.
Comedy.
Yeah. Skiing. Taught my girls to ride a bike. The skiing instructor is the one Tilo Schwartz talks about all the time because he was a skiing instructor. In fact, there's a bizarre prevalence of ski instructors in the kata community among the guys, at least, right? Everyone's laughing at me because that's true. And so he always says, what does a ski instructor do? First, they ask you to try to ski. Show me your skiing. And they make a decision then based on what they think skiing should look like of where to start teaching you or what you should work on next. Yeah. So I think most people can relate somehow that they learned a routine to learn a better skill or a habit. Okay. I'm not getting an advance. Why not?
You probably need to click away from the chat window.
Chat window's not open.
There you go. Oh,
there we go. Okay, so that brings us to the improvement and coaching kata. This is the only slide I attempted animations on. So first we have a duo or a pair, if you will, a coach and a learner who meet every single day at the learner's storyboard. The learner is learning to was going to say run, but it's learning the improvement kata. And this is the four steps of the improvement kata: understanding the challenge, grasping the current condition, establishing. So that's like, where do I want to be in the 3 months or 6 months? How will I know when I get there? Then you start with, where am I now? So this is not, you know, rocket science. Where am I now? You get some data on this, perhaps the same metrics that you just described where you're going to be. You establish the next check-in point or the next milestone on the route to the challenge achievement. And we call that the next target condition, because we stress the way the process runs, not just the numbers. And then finally, we get to the fun part where everybody gets you, or you experiment every day towards getting your hypothesized target condition to work. So that's the improvement kata. This is the Kata School Cascadia version, because I like the colors. We've also know that all the way through this, it's very important that the learner pause and reflect, stop and say, what did I learn? You know, what did I learn about my challenge? What did I learn about myself today? What did I learn that I can take forward into the next experiment or the next investigation of my current condition? The coaching side also has a kata. We call it the coaching kata. This, and it matches up. So there are questions that you ask during the planning phase when there is no target condition yet. And then once you have a target condition, there are questions for the coach, that phase. So basically, there's a great level of predictability in this structure. There are guidelines. You can't fall too far off. And the coach and the learner meet every day at that storyboard. The coach is studying the learner, asking the questions. The learner is getting in, basically learning about their process and investigating it. And the coach is also reflecting all the time. Where is this learner? What am I doing? How is it going? What's my next target condition for this learner and their understanding of the improvement kata? What's my next target condition for me and how I'm running this coaching cycle? So the do, reflect, do again, try again, and a lot of documentation basically is what's happening here. I think that this is part of the secret sauce, is that there's a structure on both sides. So I don't know if all coaching models have a structure on both sides, but we have in Gakata something the learner understands is happening, something the coach is understanding is happening, and there's full transparency. I always hand my learner, back in the days, Mike, when we were in person, Mark, it was amazing. I could hand them the coaching card. They would hang it on their storyboard. Now we're usually virtual. I just make sure they have one, because there are no surprises. They know what I'm going to ask them. And yet, believe me, they still struggle to get an answer that meets my reference every single day. So I'm going to pause for a second to see if anybody is saying anything in the chat about that. Otherwise, I'm going to move on. This is a learner storyboard. I put it up not for its shock value, but to let you see the level of detail and the level of learning perhaps is here. This is from a learner named Arissa. You can see I was her coach, and she gave me permission to share this when I give presentations. So this is a digital storyboard, and it's incredibly neat. Okay, often a storyboard is messy, but what I want you to see is that she has run charts in her current condition. She has process block that described there in those block, in the sticky notes in lines. She has an idea of her target condition. You can see evidence that she is reflecting there on the bottom. I don't know if you can see. Oops, shoot. Hold on. You can see my pointer maybe? Yes. Okay, good. Down here, you can see evidence that she's reflecting. And up here is her experimenting record. Where, you know, you can see, like, look at the detail, what happened, what we learned. There's just a lot of stuff happening there. This is a previous one. Obstacles. I think obstacles are one of the coolest things about the Kata duo, the coaching Kata and the improvement Kata. So we never have problems. We have challenges and we have obstacles. And I think that kind of thinking is really liberating for people, because it's not negative, right? It's an obstacle is something that you know how to tackle and you can learn about. Finally, I wanted to point out this idea of micro-learning. This is something that KGG, the Kata Girl Geeks, named, and it's a small burst of learning. And Arissa, being amazing as she is, has organized hers by what she's learning about the steps of the challenge. So direction, challenge, current condition, target condition, experimenting, and then what she's learned about overall about the kata. But the idea that you document your learning, you document it here, you might document it someplace else. She even documented ideas that she had, is a way for you to keep track of what's going on. And I think some level of documentation is really important to getting better at coaching too. So finally, we're going to talk about coaching. Do you have a coaching framework? Like if you've been asked to be a coach, I think it's really, really important that you have a framework. It's pretty hard to freestyle your coaching, especially if you don't have the experience of having been coached by somebody who was good at it. So what do I mean by a framework? Well, like I said, there's many published models, but I think what you need is a structure or a pattern that you can practice. You need a reference to know what does good look like. What does great look like? Tilo Schwartz always says, used to say, what does perfect look like? But we kind of got him off perfect. But, you know, like, what is your reference? And the idea of reference is like with a micrometer, you know, it's exactly this is the right size. So what is correct or what are you looking for? And finally, do you have some way to support yourself? So do you have a community to practice with or to support your learning? I think the coaching framework needs all three of these legs to stand on. So there you go. And isn't it clever that I put them in frames? I'm very pleased with that. Okay. So what does kata coaching look like? In 2022, the Kata Girl Geeks shared 11 live coaching sessions at KataCon, where often there's only one. But because there's a progression as you go, we thought doing 11 was better. So here's a really typical straight out of the book arrangement of a learner, Susan Clancy here on this side, her coach, Gemma Jones, and the second coach in this picture is Julie Simmons. All three of those people are also all, I think, founders of Kata Girl Geeks. So that's kind of fun. So here's the storyboard. Gemma has the coaching card. Susan, I think, is writing on a sticky note. And Julie is probably timing and taking notes at the same time. So there you go. That's what it would look like generally. It can also just look like this, a coach and a learner, not necessarily a second coach in the mix, but basically a lot of conversations happen in front of storyboards in kata coaching. If we're on Zoom, it looks quite a bit like the webinar. We're looking at something and we're talking. I think also kata coaching can look like this. It's hard to tell from this photo who the coach is and who is the learner, but Jennifer is the coach in this picture. And I included this one because recently Fortune Buchholz, who was a learner in a Kata Girl Geek group I was second coaching, offered this quote in her summary reflection. She said, "You know, I have found in the kata a lot more kindness and empathy than you get from reading the books." And I think that is a really important point to remember, that this is an interpersonal human activity. And if you can front load the kindness and empathy, you will probably have a lot more success than if you're pushing for some kind of result that the other person isn't quite there. So this is, I just wanted to add this. I love this picture, but I also love the idea that Fortune experienced a lot more kindness and empathy as a learner than she expected, having read the books. And believe me, she's read the books. So there you go. Oh, that's great. I love that one. Finally, and here we are at 9:25, so I'm right on time. How do you get better at coaching? Let's say you actually want to be a coach, and not necessarily a kata coach, actually. Maybe you just want to be a better coach in your job or in your family. How would you get better at it? Well, I have quoting Doug Lemoff in his book, Practice Perfect, which we really love in the kata community. But I'm going to say that Doug tells us, and he studies both professional coaching and teaching. He was originally a teacher. He says that he used to think you could just write down a few things, you know, casually keep notes. But he found, in fact, that you don't get better if you're doing that. What you need to do is, yes, reflect and write things down, but you have to get very specific data on whatever you're trying to get better at. So whatever you're focused on. And so in the CATA coaching, for example, one thing that I keep track of is the time, the start to finish time of a coaching cycle. You know, we're asking people to do this during their workday. Time is important. So the front of Mike Rother's book says 20 minutes a day. But I find and have some data to prove it that in the beginning with a new person, it can take up to 30 minutes. And over time, as the improver gets more proficient at juggling all the parts and knowing what to expect and answering the questions, you know, that very typically falls to under 10 minutes for a coaching cycle. And I even want to know the time on each question. So as a second coach, I'm often timing how long does it take that coach and learner to get through what is your challenge, what is your target condition, what is your current condition, to get to what did you learn from your last step? Because that's actually the meat of the conversation generally. And so you don't want to spend 17 minutes on the beginning and 3 minutes on the end. You want to definitely spend more time on the learning and the next step. So I would recommend, it, no matter what kind of coach you are, you know, start use your smartphone and get some time, but don't just write the time on your calendar. Cause I have tried that. You got to get a run chart going. You know, we say in Category Geeks, run chart, or it didn't happen. So literally every day, if you talk to somebody, was it time? Also, I have consistently, ever since I started teaching adults, tried to track my talk time versus the other person's talk time. In a coaching cycle, the coach's questions are scripted. So there's absolutely no reason baked in that you should talk more than maybe 15% of the time. So if you've got 15 minutes, you know, you're looking maybe a couple minutes for the coach and then way more time for the learner to be talking. So that's something to think about. But that's like, are you trying to get better at that? I also think you could keep specific data on what we call the bookends of the coaching cycle, or how do you begin and how do you end? When I first started learning the coaching CATA, I always get the year wrong. Is it 2011, 2012, something like that? People talked a lot about leaving the coaching cycle frustrated. They would say, look, you're going to be mad. It's hard. It's new. The improver, the learner is going to walk away frustrated. And I would say, well, you stopped too soon, right? You should leave at least encouraged to try again. You should leave at least feeling listened to or cared about. And you should leave with the relationship intact. So I think something you could work on, no matter what kind of coaching you're on, is how do you start and how do you end? And I would just keep data on that, literally. We always ask our coaches to have an idea and a specific point in mind of where that particular learner is learning. So do they need to know more about just the industrial engineering of studying a process? Do you feel like what they don't get is how does an obstacle relate to their target condition? So, I mean, this is a list of the things I usually keep track of. This is one that Tila Schwartz and I spend a lot of our time on. Your actual words compared to what you intended to say. So, a lot of people have trouble being sparse with their words. And they will elaborate to the point where either they're talking a lot or they confuse people. So what did you actually say versus what you intended to say? And then one thing we might practice afterwards, if you have a buddy or a second coach, is, you know, when you said this, what else could you have said? And keep track of that. And that's a really good way to get better too. And then role play, just run that conversation again. Okay, say it to me. Okay, here's how I would answer. And finally, we look for progress in scientific thinking. Are you and your learner being methodical? Are you being data-driven? Are you testing hypotheses? I think those are all things that if you paid attention to like any one of those, you might in fact find that you could make progress on your coaching. Just going to see what the next slide is. Okay, so can you get better at coaching on your own? Probably yes, but boy, is it hard. You know, like, because it's really hard to honestly study yourself. It's really hard to have the motivation to keep up the data, to keep the attention there. I think at CATA School Cascadia, which we're just kind of a casual grouping of coaches who like to get together, but we meet lots of people who have tried coaching on their own And they come to us pretty confused. And we're getting better and better at helping unconfused people. So can you get better at coaching on your own? If you are on your own, by all means, reflect and keep some data. But my advice to you would be find a friend, because you will be much easier to get better on your own if you're with somebody. So that's this one. What about if you have a second coach or a buddy? Well, if you do that, you're going to gain a lot of things. You're going to gain an observer. Not too many people videotape themselves, so it's pretty hard to observe yourself. Back in the olden days, I used to tell people, and actually you can still do this with your phone, just record it. You want to know how much you talk and you don't have a friend? Just record it and then listen to it and then delete it, because it's always horrible and embarrassing and cringeworthy and humbling to actually hear what question you asked compared to what you thought you were asking when you were reading right off the card, or to hear how much you talk when you're pretty sure you don't talk that much. Like right now, I'm talking so much, it's my spidey senses going, but we don't have that many slides left. So you gain an observer, which is great. You gain somebody to talk things through. You will have puzzles, so a buddy is a great idea. You gain a supporter, and if they have any knowledge at all, you could get a coach who'll be focused on your development, which is how you're going to get better. You gain somebody to practice with, and you probably will gain more. You'll gain some emotional support and some encouragement, which, you know, you are going to need if you're coaching. What about in a community? How do you get better in community? Well, if you join a group or you have a group, you get to compare experiences in a safe place. You get to share and hone your reference. Like, this is very important. If you're by yourself, you can get into a bit of a rabbit hole about what good enough is or what good sounds like or what a complete answer is. So I think being in a group, you sharpen each other's swords. I mean, my collaboration with Mark Rosenthal has just really, I think, sharpened my abilities in lots of ways. Especially cool if your buddy and your group are not all people exactly like you. So, you know, you'll get that perspective. You will find support, as I said, safety, encouragement, and goals, and you will find lots of people to practice with, and even more. If you give a webinar with Mark Graben, maybe some of your friends will show up and you'll have a big crowd as we do today. So I really recommend finding that community. Also, I have to tell you, it's way more fun if you're in a group. And this is a couple photos I thought I'd include because I love the smiley faces. On the left, you see category geek Chandra Bosman from Statistics Canada, another Canadian, surrounded by her community as she gives her very first conference talk at CataCon last year. And her talk was about a first-time coach's experience, as you can see. So there you go. And the photo here on the right is some of the coaches from last summer's CATA School Cascadia summer camp, where we get together for a week to just practice CATA together. But the companionship, I think, and the fun is very evident in both of those photos. The other thing is you do not have to leave home to find your community. A lot of CATA stuff happens on Zoom. In fact, the pandemic and the arrival of Zoom both were really great for CATA skill development for coaches, because all of a sudden there were people you could talk to just about anywhere, anytime. This is a photo from our Friday, 12:30 p.m. Pacific, coaches Zoom, where coaches from all over the world can just Zoom in and ask questions or tell stories or seek support. And we get pretty nerdy sometimes. It's a free Zoom. And there are also now other CATA schools that also have coaches calls. There's one in the United States in the Northeast run by Kelly Mallory, who's joined us today. So you don't have to leave home to find your community. A lot of people have asked me, how do CATA Girl Geeks grow such great coaches in a year? So I wrote a little bit about it here, and it might be something in the questions later. We have a proven path in CATA Girl Geeks. We also meet on Zoom, by the way, as you can see. To CATA coaching, we have a path in what we call our ways of working, or our WOW. And the first one is you got to participate in our meetings for a while. And in most of our meetings, there is a live coaching cycle. And these days, from a different learning group, so a different learner coach, second coach group, just share the storyboard and we watch them coach live. Having had the experience of seeing people do this for a while, I think you get a good idea of what you're getting into. And you also start to develop an idea of what does it look like? What does good look like? What does it feel like? Then we ask that people be a learner. So they take the role of learner. Even if they show up and say, hey, I'm a coach, I'm a great CADA coach, we say, great, you can be a learner for us. And this is, by the way, a great screening question, because anybody who tells us they're a CADA coach who doesn't want to be a learner is probably not much of a CADA coach. And most of the time people go like, wow, that would be so awesome. I haven't been a learner in ages. And in fact, I have just volunteered to be a learner in the next group, because it's a really great way to get back to your foundational skills and to experience the other side of the card and to make sure that you haven't, you know, lost your chops, as my dad would say, that you haven't fallen away from the way that it, you know, you, but the way you, that you, you're walking the talk, that you're doing what you tell people to do. If you come in as a new person, we actually expect 3 challenges before we would consider you kind of coach worthy. And those are 8-week challenges done in a 12-week period. So that means it takes you half a year. We think it takes about 6 months. I have to tell you, this is a radical position a little bit, because Mike Rother's book suggests that in 20 days, you could start coaching. Recently, in one of our calls, I said, hey, raise your hand if you started coaching too early. And almost everyone raised their hand because they had started before they were ready and crashed and burned quite a bit. So you have to be a learner. You have to complete 90 cycles or something like that. And then every coach has a second coach. So you always have support. Every now and then, actually, we've had a first time second coach and they get a third coach. So they get somebody to support them in that new role. And you have to keep learning and sharing. So the bad news is there is no shortcut or fast way, really. The best way is the slow way, because slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And so that is how we do it in CADA Girl Geeks. Now, what is a CADA school? A CADA school is a local hub for CADA. And wow, look at them. I don't even know if this is the latest slide, because they are all over the world now. CADA School Cascadia is the one way over there on the top left side of the slide. We're just where Canada and the US meet along the West Coast on the Pacific Ocean. And you can see a group. There's lots of dots in North America. And there's one in Brazil, and then Europe and South Africa, yay. And then, of course, way off in New Zealand, Australia. So you probably will find a CADA school in your language and in your time zone if you're looking for one. And if not, you will find some that welcome everybody, as we certainly do. And CADA School Northeast also does in the United States. So CADA School Cascadia, just Mark asked me to talk about our mascot, as you can see behind me. We had a conversation, I don't know, a year and a half ago, in which somebody was talking about the word yet and how important it is if you're going to say, I don't know. And we always want to get to the point where we don't know, because that's the learning zone. That's the threshold of knowledge, Mike Rother calls it. And so the incredible power as a coach, if you offer the word yet, when somebody says, I don't know, I'm not sure, I don't know yet. So Mark Rosenthal, who you saw on the first slide standing beside me, said we should have a mascot, and the mascot should be a Yeti, and we should call it I Don't Know Yeti. Oh, it says them now. I decided that the Yeti is a they, them. So I Don't Know Yeti is our mascot. This is this guy. He's a $20 plushie you can get on Amazon. We also have a baby Yeti, and there's quite a number now of handmade Yetis that different people have made. But I think it shows 2 things. One is our we're always learning mindset, and the other one is this should be fun. So we started as a group of regional Pacific Northwest coaches in 2019. We now serve and welcome people from around the world. We have a online community, but we also meet in person and we enjoy having fun together. We offer 2 free 30-minute Zooms every Friday. The first one at noon Pacific is what we call our starter CADA call. It's for anybody learning or is new to coaching. The second one is for coaches. We have done some what we call CADA Geek meetups, which are sharing activities where different people present. We have a YouTube channel. We have a resource mural board. And of course, we have our mascot. So we have a website. So I think we're pretty easy to find. We also have a LinkedIn group, actually, if you're into that. This is a picture from last year from our summer camp at Cass Tailored in Mukilteo, Washington. And I would be remiss to not mention we are meeting again this year in July, where you will find me, Mark Rosenthal, Gemma Jones, and Tilo Schwartz all together, along with a bunch of other awesome coaches. Just we get together for the weekend, we practice together. So I have some questions. How are you getting better at coaching, and how do you know? How do you know is probably the best part. And if general reflections after a coaching cycle aren't enough to improve, and that's certainly what the research tells us, then what specific aspects of coaching do you need data or observations on? Think about that one. And of course, the ultimate cat question, what's your next step? So that's all that I have prepared. And we are pretty much on time for a Q&A. Shall I stop sharing? Or do you want me to keep, don't stop sharing? No.
Hi, Tracy. Yeah, thank you for that. Now, please go ahead and leave the screen share up, because I have a few announcements while, and I'll encourage people to continue submitting questions during that 2 minutes or so of announcements. And we'll leave a Q&A slide up on screen with contact information. So thank you. Thank you, Tracy. And maybe we'll come back to this.
You want me to move to the Q&A slide?
No, just go ahead and advance through the slides, and I'll do those announcements. So if you can do the next one. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
So our webinar next month, registration is not quite open for this, but you will receive an email when registration is available, since you registered for this one. It's going to be presented by Elizabeth Chase, who works for the city of Frisco, Texas, which is a city of about 200,000 people, a suburb north of Dallas. They have been doing some great work that started with Elizabeth and colleagues in the public library, and some of it has spread throughout other city departments. So Elizabeth is going to be sharing some of those stories, some of those reflections in the next webinar, April 24th at 1 o'clock Eastern. Also invite you, if you want to go to kinexus.com/webinars, we've got, I think, 120. I should know this number, but
we have a big library.
A big library of webinars on demand. They're all free, and you can get to any of those by clicking on that big button that says webinars on demand. Next, please. Invite you also to visit our blog, blog.kinexus.com. A lot of articles about all things continuous improvement. Next.
Yep.
We also have a podcast. The audio of today's webinar, like the others, will be in the podcast feed, along with other things that we publish there. If you want to revisit this while you're out for a walk or driving home from work someday, you can learn about the Kinexus at kinexus.com/podcast, or you can find it anywhere you might listen to podcasts. And then next, you will be prompted when you leave the webinar to fill out a survey, a feedback survey. And I know we get surveyed to death. I feel like sometimes I get a survey about the survey after going to a store. But please do take a couple of minutes to fill this out. We do read through those. We will share that feedback with Tracy. And there's a question in there about topics you'd like to learn about in future webinars. Please do take a minute or two to fill that out. And we've learned over time, Tracy, by asking specifically for that, the adoption rate on filling out the feedback survey has been a little bit higher. So thanks to everybody.
Excellent.
That out.
Hey, and last one.
Next. All right. There's Q&A. Information, Tracy's email address and web address are on screen. So with that, ready for some questions, Tracy?
Absolutely.
And sometimes people ask questions early on when it gets addressed later, but
yeah.
I'm going to ask some of those anyway, just as an opportunity for you to recap.
Sure.
And refresh. So there were a couple versions of this question that came in. You talked in the beginning about telling is not teaching, telling is not coaching. Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips on how to break the telling habit, if you will?
Well, you know, my friend Katie Anderson, I think, has a whole book about that. So for sure. But I think one of the, first of all, like, be conscious that you don't want to do it. I think that's really important, having an intention. And then I think people have triggers for telling, you know, like they have things they like to tell. Mm-hmm. And they have stories they like to tell. And so I think noticing when you catch yourself telling would be great. And leading with a question, I think, is a good way to not tell.
I
coached a guy who was the CEO of a scientific research group. And one of his experiments was because English was not his first language, and he was very insecure about talking English. And he would say something, and then he would keep talking about it. And then he would keep talking about it. And then he would talk through the whole meeting, like insecurely. And so we did an experiment, which was where he said one thing and stopped and let the other person have a turn. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, he broke his telling habit. But he also, this is really funny, everyone noticed right away that he had stopped talking so much, and they assumed that he had a great English teacher, but also somehow that his executive coach and his other, he had a whole bunch of people trying to help him. But the only experiment he ran was to say one question or one statement and then not speak again until the other person had completely finished. So I think a good way to break the telling habit is to give more turns to other people. And to sort of say, today I will encourage with like right now I can see you nodding, right? Yeah. That makes me talk more and it makes you talk less. So that's a good one.
There is, I think, some real human nature in the telling habit, if that's reassuring to anybody. Like, we've had a webinar in the series about a topic, a method called motivational interviewing, and even counselors get into the telling habit, or they call it the writing reflex, R-I-G-H-T-I-N-G. Like, it is very much human nature. We're trying to be helpful, so we tell. But I think the good news is, like, we can be mindful of that habit and break it, right? Or build a new habit.
What you might also find is your first manager or your grandmother or your mother or your grade three teacher's voice will come out of your mouth. And so you're falling back on a pattern that you need to break or that you want to break. And so people find this also in if you're in a couple, like maybe your default thing you want to say isn't helpful. So I think becoming mindful of that, but also do what you have to do. Clench your fist. My husband is a psychiatrist in cognitive behavior. They teach people to snap an elastic band. Mm-hmm. But I think just noticing it is a great is a good beginning. And maybe write a little note to yourself, because I think people do have triggers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing I've tried, sometimes I'll stand and I will literally cross my fingers, like just as a reminder to myself, this is not my time to talk yet, mm-hmm. to reinforce not jumping in if I shouldn't be.
That's, I mostly second coached lately, and I actually have to mute myself and turn off my camera. So that they don't see my face and I cannot speak, because mm-hmm. there's 100 times where I'd like to push the coach aside and just take over, because I know I can get there faster or do a better job, but that's actually not my role. So I just turn off my camera and I mute, mm-hmm. and then my little square is there, but they can't really see me and I can't talk. I think you have to do what you have to do.
We have a question that came in. How would you practice this type of coaching in an environment where these concepts are unknown?
Ooh, well, we have a word for that. We call that I call it kata in secret. Some people call it ninja kata. Some people call it kata incognito, because this is a big secret. You don't have to call it that. You don't have to introduce the whole storyboard. You don't have to start an organizational-wide training. You just have to start asking people, what exactly were we trying to achieve? Okay, and what did we do last time? And what did we learn from that? And you just start asking the experimenting question, questions, and basically trying to notice what happened and what did we learn, I think is a really great way to start that. Thilo Schwartz is doing some work right now on using the coaching kata questions in meetings and practicing using them in meetings as a way to structure a meeting, whether or not you're practicing kata. Yeah. So the you know, how to stop telling is to learn to coach. And how to learn to coach is to learn to ask questions and listen and have the intention of developing the other person. So that's certainly one way. And if you are going to try to employ the CADA coaching questions, which I think have, are starting after all this time to gain a little bit of gravitas, like a little bit of reputation that they work. I think then, you know, you can be all by yourself, but still have a buddy or a community. And I don't think you, just because you're the only one in your company doesn't mean you have to be alone. And so I think that's important. And then the other thing to think about is CADA grows organically in lots of places. Like if you read the books, it sounds like, you know, your CEO needs to have an epiphany and realize that your culture sucks and they want to try something else and maybe more participation and learning would be great. But that doesn't happen very often. What mostly happens is a couple people are tackling a problem and they decide to give this a go. And then it kind of grows organically from there. So yes, I would say it's possible to start it in a place. In fact, it only ever starts in places where it isn't known. Yeah. That's like the only known way. A small group of people.
Yeah. Another question that came in, what are some of the differences and adjustments you've made when coaching remotely versus in person?
Okay. Well, that's a great question because originally I thought remote coaching would not work. Hmm. Okay. Like the first person I coached remotely was Deandra Wardell. When she asked me to coach her, I said yes. Then I found out she lived really far away from me. I thought, well, this is not going to work. But Beth Carrington, who is a CADA originator, was remote coaching with WebEx or something in the day. And she told me to give it a go. So I tried it and I was really surprised that it worked at all because I actually thought it was like the reading the body language and the physical proximity and the staring together at the storyboard. I thought all of these things were super important. So some of the adjustments, if you're coaching remotely, is you need to be able to see the storyboard at the same time as the improver, the learner is doing that. We use digital storyboards like Mural and Miro. There are people who actually keep a physical storyboard and just send me photos every day. Here's my experimenting record. Here's my current condition. Here's my full board. I can zoom in. You know that your phone camera is so good now. I can get great resolution and zoom right in. We have also, one of the things is you can't go. So there's a point in the coaching cycle sometimes where you where you struggle a bit. And the thing we used to do was, you know, put out our arm and say, let's go down and see together. It's actually quite hard to go down to see together if you are 3,000 miles apart. But the late, great Hal Froelich taught me that the person can start a FaceTime on their phone and just walk you through the process. So, I mean, we make adjustments and I don't know. And nowadays, I don't know who's getting coached in person, honestly, because even when people are in the same building, sometimes they use Teams or something and dial in. So I think those are some of the adjustments for sure.
Right.
I think you have to also, like if I'm second coaching remotely, I have a conversation outside the coaching cycle, but some coaches will just email me in the morning. Here's my intention for today. Here's what I want you to watch out for and things like that. So, you know, we communicate a different way than if we were together.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, Tracy. Another question. Do you think there's a need to pre-qualify the people being coached to make CADA effective?
Well, pre-qualify is kind of a harsh time word. support and onboard. Yes. I meet people all the time who are being CADA coached, for example, who have never seen a run chart. Like they've just never been asked to keep data. Mm-hmm. And so it's like a huge, like, what? And so we just teach them. So there is an element of, let me show you, or let's do this together. I think one of the advice I would give to anybody who's thinking of like bringing people into CADA as a learner is start with the willing, mm-hmm. you know, like start with somebody who wants to learn or who has something that really bugs them about their work that they would like to work on and that is probably tied to an organizational need, because you can't voluntold people to go learn things, you know, And there's going to be, it's going to be hard enough without it being for volunteers. In my experience, if you start in one area, like I'm thinking of this guy who was the shipping receiving person, and he was running, doing a CATA to improve, I can't remember what his goal was. Doesn't matter. Do something. And in order to do that, he had all the people around him, which was maybe four or five people, and they were taking photos and they were doing timings and they were, you know, helping him build his current condition and his board and sometimes running experiments. And then all of them wanted the opportunity to be learners, right? So I think sometimes just seeing it happening, you know, it's the old, I'll have what she's having. Like that looks like that's going well and it was fun. And I think that's the way. I don't think you can, I don't know if you can be drawn in and be reluctant and then be converted at the same time. That would seem to me to be a hard go for especially a new coach.
Tracy, you had posed a question. I'm going to put it back in the chat here and see if we get some responses from people back via the chat. How do you know? How are you getting better at coaching?
Yes.
How do you know? And maybe, you know, could you elaborate? Maybe while some answers are coming in, Tracy, you had said, how did you put it? General reflections aren't enough. Could you give an example of what would you consider a general reflection? Just like asking, hey, how do you think that went?
Yes. Coach and, me, or even writing it down. Like, I mean, actually the coach saying, well, okay, if you're new to keeping notes, then knowing if you were within your time frame, it's good. And then maybe putting a little symbol like, happy face or sad face is enough of a start, but you probably won't get better until you look for patterns and you decide what level you're aiming for. That's what I mean. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of research on teachers and coaches and sports coaches that say, pay attention in the game, if you will. So in the coaching session to the thing that you practiced in the practice. So, you know, you're not just saying, did we win the game? You're saying, did we practice those diagonal kicks as passes? Because that's what we're working on, mm-hmm. right? If nobody ever did one of those, either I didn't teach it very well, we didn't practice it right. It's the same with the coaching. If you are trying to start and end on a good note, I mean, like, let's start with that. Then mm-hmm. you want to know, what did I say? What did I say? Is this a, you know, is now a bad time for us to get going and let them vent a little bit about why it's a bad time and clear that out? Or did you just say, let's go, I got to be at a meeting in 3 minutes or whatever. So I think knowing that you impact it and keeping track is really important. If you just think, I'm giving this a 1 out of 10, or I thought that went really well and Tracy's doing a great job, no one is going to improve. Mm-hmm. Not you and probably not the other person. It's about being specific. Yeah. I see somebody asked the reason for the recording time. Is it to manage time or how you make sure it's not interrupting the coaching? Okay, well, if you have a second coach, it's pretty easy for them to note the time that you ask the question and then the time you move to the next question. It's partly to manage time, but it's also to know how much time are you spending on each part of this coaching cycle. So we have, you know, we ask about the challenge, we ask about target condition, current condition. Most of the time, if you're in the experimenting phase, those first three questions have short answers, like a minute or less. And then you want to be spending 5 minutes on what did you learn from your last step? What is your next step? What obstacles are in your way? You want to be spending the bulk of your time on that, way more time than you spent on what are your numbers today. Lots of learners will... I don't know how much time. Oh, we're at time. Lots of people will tell you everything they think because they think that you're interested in their thinking. And you need to teach them what's the appropriate things to talk about during the coaching cycle.
Well, that's great, Tracy. And scene. Yeah. Thank you so much. Excuse me, my voice today. My goodness. Thank you, Tracy. Good thing I wasn't presenting if my voice was going to be squeaking like that. But thank you, Tracy. I'm glad you were able to share so much with us today in the presentation. I want to thank everybody for attending. Thanks in advance for filling out the feedback survey. There are a lot of thank yous and great jobs coming in through the chat. So again, our presenter today, Tracy Defoe, you can learn more at her website, thelearningfactor.ca. And
just as easy to find me on LinkedIn if you are looking to connect. I find lately I don't even know why we have a website anymore. Everybody seems to connect with me through LinkedIn.
Well, thank you for adding that too. And we'll look forward to seeing people here for the future webinars. Again, April 24th, Elizabeth Chase from the city of Frisco, Texas. Again, thank you, everybody. Thanks, Tracy.
Thank you. Thanks.